In front of me, I have the new book, Ray and Joan, subtitled The Man Who Made the McDonald's Fortune and the Woman Who Gave It All Away. It's written by Lisa Napoli. Lisa Napoli has also had the book Radio Shangri-La and also has worked for the New York Times, MSNBC, and the public radio show Marketplace and many other places as well. Time to welcome her. Thank you for joining me. How are you today?
Oh, I'm good. Thank you for having me.
I know people will read this book, and I'm curious also about the relationship between Ray and Joan Crock, but I want to go to the end, if I could, and start there, and we'll see how much backwards we can work from there. At the back, when you do the appendix of all of the places that are public knowledge of where Joan Crock gave away the money, I mean, that is an amazing list. Do you ever still look at that list and say, that is just fantastic?
Oh, David, in fact, now that the book is out, I am sure that people are going to come out of the woodwork and tell me things that she gave money to that I didn't know about. It just is astonishing, the breadth and depth of her giving. Really, really incredible. It's what kept me going all these years.
I like the last one that's listed in that multi-page list of donations. Auntie Helen's Fluff and Fold in San Diego, $500,000. I mean, there's a lot on there that you'd recognize, but then you get to something like that. I read someplace earlier in the book what that was, but why $500,000 to a fluff and fold auntie, whatever her name was?
Because Joan was a pioneer in funding AIDS research. She was very, very active and involved in that world, or very dedicated to that world. And so there's a fluff and fold that does laundry for AIDS patients, and they needed new machines, so she gave them money to buy the new machines. And that was just, I love that gift because, yeah, it's just so, it seems so random. But when you look at this roadmap of her giving at the back of the book, it really shows you the evolution of her as a person, how she goes from, you know, starting, she gave some money to flood relief in Rapid City, South Dakota back in the 70s, where she had lived for a while. And then it just evolves into alcoholism. And it really is a roadmap from which Ray suffered. And other things that seem more mysterious, some are clues to her personality. It really is a Rosetta Stone, her list of giving. But I can't wait to find out what I didn't know about, because that's going to be as interesting as what we do.
So how did this tendency for her philanthropy blossom post Ray Crock's death?
I think she was just a compassionate person who came from modest means and who, like most people who are, you know, I like to believe that most people are genuinely good and they want to help how they can. I mean, it's harder to help when you have less, of course, but she just had this huge heart, and she happened to have this huge pocketbook to match it. And she felt this sense of responsibility in having this money. Yes, she didn't, you know, live like a monk. She wasn't living like an ascetic. But she also wanted to give money away as well as living well. And she felt that was part of the mandate that she had. She just was a responsibility.
You know,
it seems to have dated back to when she was a young woman, too.
Well, that's interesting because some would look at this and say, you know, it seems like she could almost be careless in her giving. But even as I was reading parts, and there is one part where it's talking about Father Theodore Herzberg and how she ended up, I think you said that she would write him a check for $1 million on his birthday each year. You know, some of that seems careless, but then I didn't feel like it was carelessly wasted good deeds that she was doing.
Right. You know, there's another strategy that well-to-do people do, and in fact that Ray did after he became enormously rich in 1965 when McDonald's went public, and that was the fiscally prudent thing to do, which was to establish a foundation where you cordon off some money and you get a tax deduction, and you're giving away a certain amount as prescribed by the law every year, and it's good, you know, good for you. But Joan didn't want that. She had that for a while after Ray died. All the money, the assets from the Crock Foundation transferred into a foundation with her name on it. But that was too formatted and formulaic for her. She wanted to just give when she wanted to give, and she didn't want to be calculated and systematic about it. And that's what makes her interesting. If she had had a foundation, we probably wouldn't be talking right now because it wouldn't have been so interesting. But she dissolved that foundation in the name of being able to be more responsive. And the truth is she didn't, you know, when you're that wealthy, a tax deduction is, you know, the least of your, there's so many things that you're concerned about. So it really wasn't necessary for her. And it just spoke a lot to her character that she didn't reinstate the foundation before she died and keep her name on in perpetuity, because that would have done that, and that wasn't what her core value was.
Lisa Napoli is our guest. The book is Ray and Joan. Do you think, after you've researched this, and I think you worked on this book for like 5 years, after you had done the work on this book, did you think if people would have known of her political involvement in anti-nuclear war or her wanting to deal with the AIDS crisis, would that have affected the popularity of McDonald's at all?
Well, it did, actually. At the time, she was under a lot of criticism for being such a vocal no-nukes activist. They called her, some conservative columnists called her a McNutt. Mm-hmm. And with her AIDS research, in one particular instance, she funded a clinic in New York, and there was a hue and cry by people in the area, very anti-McDonald's. But, of course, the issue was that she wasn't with McDonald's at that point. She'd happened to have inherited money that her husband had made from McDonald's, but she was in this squishy kind of role that women often are, spouses often are, where she was not an active representative of the corporation in any way. She wasn't on their board, nothing. But, of course, people indelibly linked her to Ray, and even though he was deceased and even though she'd started selling off the stock, they made that connection. So it's a really interesting point that you make, that especially since she was involved with things that were controversial, that weren't necessarily representative of the McDonald's mandate, it put her in a sticky position, and the company, too, at the time. By the time she died, she was, I think, seen as more distant from there. She had distanced herself. And, of course, Ray's memory is diminished now, too, unless you happen to study business or have been around during the time. Or I'm told that MBA students all around the world know who Ray Kroc is, but they don't really understand the real story about Ray Kroc and how McDonald's really came to be. And that's what I aim to tell in the book.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I was going to say. You'll find out in this, and we've skipped over that part because I knew people would gravitate to that pretty quickly. Before I let you go, I'm just curious. So what would you hope would come after people would read Ray and Joan? Obviously, an interest story in their lives and in how they met up and in how he started McDonald's and things of that nature. But also, is there something bigger that you would want people to take? Would it be the example of generosity from a Joan Kroc, or would it be something in addition to that?
Yes, that's a great question. I'm so glad you asked it. I think every day as I've been working on this book, and there were so many times where I thought it was just going to go bust and I wouldn't get it done, I wouldn't get it sold, I wouldn't get it out there, I just kept thinking, I want to honor this woman so that other people see not just that there's another side to McDonald's, because I certainly have nothing to do with McDonald's officially in any way. They haven't helped me in any way. But I think it's really important in our world today to see that everything isn't black and white, and that there are possibilities for good to come out of bad, and that there are people who are willing to do really good things, even though you might not expect them to be the person who did that, and maybe hopefully inspire people to be involved and active in their worlds and take their pain and difficulties and turn it into something outside themselves. And that's what Joan did in such a radical, fabulous way. Obviously, most people don't have the access to resources that she did, but I think we all can learn from her story.
Well, I think that's an interesting example to see before us at any time period in history, but perhaps really important at this time period in history to see that kind of an example that you just described. Ray and Joan, it's brand new, just out. Lisa Napoli is the author of that. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.